7BR Part Heard.
Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. In today's episode, we're joined by David Omani to discuss the book that he has recently written, Cross-Border Criminal and Civil Recovery Litigation Offshore. While cross-border civil litigation is now well understood, cross-border criminal issues do not come across the desks of onshore criminal practitioners regularly. Neither are they the bread and butter of offshore trust and tax litigators, who are often the first port of call when a problem arises. And until now, there has been no textbook to which such lawyers may turn. David is the head of offshore and international team at 7BR. He has been involved in heavyweight litigation offshore and further afield for over two decades. He has law degrees from the University of Queensland in Australia and the University of Cambridge. He attended the advanced course in international criminal law, specializing in cross-border financial crime at the Hague Academy of International Law and the Human Rights Law Summer School at the European University Institute in Florence. He has been admitted to practice in a number of jurisdictions and sits as a recorder in the English Crown Court and the County Court. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Rhys. I'll start by saying a little bit about the book and the reason for writing it. Offshore jurisdictions are an important part of the international financial system and therefore also an important part of the fight against financial crime. There's an increasing number of offshore criminal prosecutions and an increasing number of onshore criminal prosecutions that involve an offshore link. But what makes offshore criminal litigation different is that it almost always involves at least one other jurisdiction. And therefore, the law as it applies to cross-border issues in criminal cases and related cases is important. So what I've done is I've drawn from the cases throughout the common law world, both offshore and onshore. And there are cases from Northern Ireland to New Zealand and the Cook Islands, and from Hong Kong to the Caribbean, to set out what the general principles are. The book is of a length, it's quite short, that can either be read as a whole or it can be used to dip into if you need to know what the cases are on a particular topic.
And you say the book is not too big in size compared to these practitioners' texts that we are used to being relatively large. What do you hope to achieve by this book being such a short size?
Well, as I say, I hope it can be, on the one hand, a useful introduction to people who don't generally practice either offshore or in criminal proceedings. But at the same time, it can provide a sort of library of the relevant cases from across the relevant jurisdictions.
What are the general topics that you cover throughout the book?
Well, I'm going to start out by giving an overview of what is a relatively new area. I set out the international treaties and the architecture, which has developed over the last 20 or 30 years. I then go on to deal with evidence gathering and also with freezing assets and the enforcement of judgments. I focus on particular offshore issues, such as tax, but also the particular trusts and company issues that can arise by the nature of the finance industry offshore.
You mentioned international architecture. What do you mean by this?
Well, historically, criminal cases were confined to things that happened within the jurisdiction. As criminals became more sophisticated, and crime became more international, and therefore it was necessary for states to create schemes so that they could cooperate between each other to fight against substantial cross-border crime. And they did this by signing a whole series of treaties which require them to cooperate, as I say, to gather evidence, to freeze assets, to investigate, to share intelligence, and then to share assets that have been confiscated.
You also mentioned the tax implications and cases that arise through these forums. Could you just give an overview of some of the problems or cases that have occurred?
Well, the reason why the offshore finance industry grew up in the first place, is that because many of the jurisdictions are small, they can afford to have much lower tax rates. So people placed their money in these jurisdictions in order to save income tax, inheritance tax, and other forms of taxation. The advantage was that the offshore tax rules are different from those onshore. However, in a criminal case, when you are cooperating between jurisdictions, you often need to have what's known as dual criminality. In other words, the relevant conduct has to be an offence both in the jurisdiction where you are prosecuting and also the jurisdiction with whom you are cooperating. Now, when you have different tax rules, as I have described, that creates its own difficulties. And there are a number of cases which have addressed some of the questions that arise in those situations.
You also consider human rights issues which arise, particularly in relation to Article 1, Protocol 1 of the European Convention. How are those rights balanced against the effectiveness of crime control mechanisms?
Well, the key to understanding the Convention, particularly when you are concerned with qualified rights, such as the rights set out in Article 1, Protocol 1, is the concept of proportionality. So while a state can confiscate assets after a conviction or in civil proceedings alleging that they're the proceeds of crime, it can't do so if the order that the state is seeking would be disproportionate. And so now, following the Supreme Court decision in a case called Weyer, all confiscation and civil asset recovery cases onshore and offshore have an added requirement that the order be proportionate. And there is a growing body of case law, both in the jurisdictions that I consider and in others, dealing with that question.
Well, thank you, David. And just finally, when is the book available for purchase?
It has just been released. It is available for purchase on the website of Keyhaven Publications.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rhys.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this episode of 7BR's Part Heard. For more information about David's book, please head to our website, where you'll also find other episodes from members discussing a range of topics from our inquest series to Supreme Court case analysis. Thank you and goodbye.